It's the My Michelle Live Podcast.
My Michelle Live, Health Watch. She's writing a prescription for hope. Here's Michelle.
Thank you, big voice guy. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you watching, listening, or reading. As we talk health today, we will be talking about some of the news that you're not getting, some of the latest in studies where the vaccine is concerned. But since sweeping mandates affect everyone in America, man, woman, child, in one way or another, it will affect your family. Even if you're lucky enough to be in a state that says, wait a minute, there's an issue here, it's going to affect you. And what I wanted to talk about is how it is affecting people and their jobs. And interestingly enough, Joe Biden had decided to work with and meet with union leaders, and to give these, you get in with these union leaders so that we can encourage everybody to get those vaccinations. And now that we're past encouragement, because our president has lost his patience with you disobedient people, we are now at a place where we need to mandate it. So where are the unions on this? How are the unions dealing with this? And where do we go from here? Matt Mix is with us. He's president of the National Right to Work Committee. That holds about 3 million members, and they are committed to public policy. They're a public policy organization. He also serves as president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. So of all the people in the United States of America to take on this issue with, Matt is the man to do it. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Yeah, Michelle, it's good to have an opportunity to talk with you about this. And these are important issues. And while they don't directly impact the right to work issue per se as a matter of public policy, they do deal with how we deal with issues like this in the workplace. And you know, the thing that we defend against is forced unionism in the American workplace, where we believe that a worker should have the choice whether or not to join and participate with a labor union. And now that we're hearing all this talk about mandates, the idea of mandating conditions of employment is something that's very topical as it comes to the vaccine, and particularly after Joe Biden's speech on Thursday. And so it does have an impact on the workplace. But to the union officials across the country, there's kind of an interesting development here. I mean, I don't think we're seeing unanimity at all from union officials, depending on where they are, about where, how they feel and how their membership feels about these so-called mandates that are going to be applied to us, apparently.
Okay. Do you have some examples of that? And one of the reasons why I asked that is that we're not going to hear about this. We're not hearing about a lot of things on the news. That's why people like this show and many, many others who are trying to do what the press isn't doing needs to step in and say, wait a minute, think about this. So do you have some examples of where some unions are going, wait a minute, maybe this is overreaching, and we don't necessarily think we need to be in lockstep?
Yeah, there are specific examples, not only between different unions, but also in the union movement. I mean, that's what I find interesting. You think about the story about the nurses and the Houston healthcare system. 150 of them said, you know what, we're not going to take the vaccine. Their union said, well, you know, we think you should do it, but they want to negotiate over it. So in some cases, it's been a very interesting opportunity for union officials to expand their bargaining power by saying, you can't mandate it unless we negotiate over it. When you have some union members who say, yes, we want to get it, and you have some that don't. But let's take the teachers union, for example. Randi Weingarten, the head of the American Federation of Teachers, which is an AFL-CIO affiliate, she is out there promoting mandatory vaccinations for all teachers across the country. And Michelle, you and I both know not every teacher, and particularly those that study some science, you know, we're talking, we got to listen to the science. Well, when you start listening to the science about this and you start looking at where we've come with the vaccination, you know, there's lots of teachers out there that say, you know what, I'm not quite sure. So on one hand, you have a union official saying, we've got to mandate it. It's got to be done before we'll return to the classroom and teach children. And you have some teachers are saying no. Then you have a healthcare union that basically says, you know, we're kind of ambivalent. We don't want to get in the way. We've got a bunch of nurses that say no, a bunch of nurses that say yes. How do we manage that? And it's kind of an interesting question. It one that goes to the root of union power in America. They've got this ability to impose their voice on workers, whether workers want it or not. If you're in a unionized situation, the union is the sole voice in that workplace with the employer. You can't speak to the employer directly. If you do, it's an unfair labor practice charge. And what this problem has brought up for unions, this idea of mandate or no mandate when it comes to vaccinations, is causing a real rift, I think. The police unions, for example, some law enforcement people, we're seeing that the postal system, you know, the postal union has said no. And we're not sure whether Biden exempted the postal union from the federal executive order requiring them to take a vaccine to do their work. We're not sure if they're in or they're out until we see the paperwork. We won't know. But there, suffice to say that some unions are for it. Some unions are not. Some unions are promoting it while their rank and file members that they claim to represent are saying no. Some are saying yes. It's a real mess. And that's what comes when you have this kind of top down imposition of this dictatorial power, or at least exercise of power that they may not have, we'll see, of a president saying, you know, we're tired of you. You used the word better in the intro. You know, we're losing patience. And, you know, this is not about freedom. Well, it is about freedom. It's about freedom to its core. I mean, can government tell you that you must take something into your body that you say you don't want?
It is very disturbing that the president has said, hey, this isn't about freedom. It's about your safety. It's about security. When Benjamin Franklin had said, hey, if you're willing to trade your freedom for security, dude, you deserve neither. Okay, he didn't say the dude part. That was, you know, a little Michelle interpretation. Think of the hypocrisy that I keep bringing up. The White House hasn't mandated that absolutely everybody in the White House gets vaccinated. Sweetheart, as you're watching this, think about that. If it is so vital. Why? And so vital that the president has lost patience. He seems to have a lot of patience for any of his staff that may not be vaccinated. That's a truth. My thought is with the union, Matt, that they don't want to lose a lot of members. And if you have mass firings, even the healthcare system here in Washington State from the University of Washington, I think that includes Harborview for those who are local and Northwest Hospital, there's only about 300 people who are facing losing their jobs because of mandates. Now, they're okay, 300 people out of 1,000, you know, that's a few thousand, you know, maybe we're looking at a small percentage, yet that percentage are people who are no longer going to be paying union dues. So I imagine that the union is indeed paying attention because that's their bread and butter.
How dare you cut to the nub of the issue, you know? How dare you, Michelle?
I have that problem, I know. I wish there was a vaccine against it because they probably wanted to jab me for it.
I suspect you often get to the nub of the issue based on just this brief encounter that we were having. But, you know, it is about money. And so let's say, for example, 300 workers lose their jobs because of this mandate that they were not going to take it. You know, an average union dues of about $1,000, you do the math. So you're right. Union officials have a lot in this game from a revenue standpoint. And unfortunately, sometimes those decisions come down, their decision-making process comes down to the money and not necessarily what's in the best interest of the people they claim to represent. And that's one of the major fallacies in labor policy in America. The federal government has given these union officials, this private organization, the privilege to speak for people and basically say that once you're affiliated with the union, whether you voted for them or not, they're the sole voice that you have. And so they leverage that position as the spokesperson to the employer, and it does matter. The union dues matter. We know that in Washington State, you know that, and because you know we won a U.S. Supreme Court case 3 years ago called Janus v. AFSCME that freed every government worker from being forced to pay union dues to work for their government. And man, oh man, oh man, what a stink, because it literally means tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to organized labor. They don't want to let someone out and give them the choice to say, yes, I want to be in. In fact, they don't want voluntarism because voluntarism is too unpredictable, if you will.
And it's unfortunate. Because yeah. I believe that I'm going to just go on a limb and think that you agree with me on this, that the unions have done spectacular things in the United States of America. They have stood for those who were voiceless. They gave voice to people who were powerless. And for any of us who have been in a job where we felt powerless, where we were lorded over or damaged, hurt, abused by an employer, it happens. Thank God that unions were there. You know, my parents were very strong union people. I remember my dad, I remember boycotts. I remember my dad going on strike.
You can drink wine, right? Dude, grapes, right?
No. I didn't have grapes, tuna fish, or Nestle's chocolate until I don't know, I was an adult, or if I could sneak it in as a kid. But so, you know, I'm not anti-union. I'm pro real choice. When a union becomes so powerful that money is all that matters, when a union becomes abusive and tries to impose things that go vehemently against a person's belief, that's where they're no longer that champion of right. They become an entity that needs to be reined in. Sunlight's the best disinfectant. Even with this issue with the vaccine, if we're not allowed to talk about it, Matt, we can't ask that the vaccines get better. I'm not against vaccines. I think vaccines can be a great thing. But if you put nasty adjuvants that cause problems, if you have myocarditis and people die at an extreme level or have side effects, or it flipping doesn't work, then you should demand better instead of shutting down voices. We're seeing that in some cases, unions are saying, okay, we need to be the voice of the people. And in others, we're seeing, no, we're shutting down voices, which is anti-union to me. So,
don't let your head explode. You know, we've been dealing with mandates in the workplace for years and years and years, going back to the 1930s. This idea that you could be forced to associate with a union is something that came out of federal law. But Michelle, you're right. Unions played a great role in developing and protecting workers. They do that today, and they can do that in the future. But they shouldn't do it with compulsion. And now we're seeing, now all of us get to see what mandates look like, what compulsion looks like, what tyranny looks like when it comes to saying, you will do this or else. And that's power that we have loaned a certain force to government. We have done that. That's our democratic republic, our constitutional republican form of government. And you know, to quote Ben Franklin, to finish that out, your quote was better than Ben Franklin's, but he said, you know, we've given you a republic if you can keep it, when he talked about security and freedom and those types of things, if you can keep it. And so this grand experiment in self-government comes with a recognition when certain entities overstep the boundaries of their power. Certainly union officials have done that by going to legislatures and getting this unique power to force you to accept their representation. And now we're seeing a president of the United States stand up in front of the American people and saying, your freedom doesn't matter. I'm getting impatient with you. And then on the other hand, he talks about somebody bullying somebody. I mean, as if it was bad. The speech was so incoherent that I didn't know what but he used the word bullying when it came to what apparently his opponents were doing. And yet it was lost on him that what he was doing was bullying and saying, it's this or the highway when it comes to your job if you don't agree to vaccinations. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
If you'll be patient with me, I'd like to play a couple of sound bites.
Sure.
This, excuse me, this first sound bite is from multiple sources, Biden, Pelosi, Psaki, Fauci, all talking about there's no way we can make mandates. It's just not legal. It's just, you know, you can't impose this on people. And the second is asking a question. It's basically a representative from Oklahoma, James Lankford, bringing a little
Senator.
Saying there's some problems here. So let's listen to what the president said they can't do, and others.
It should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand to be mandatory, but I would do everything in my power to Just like I don't think masks have to be made mandatory nationwide.
Can we mandate vaccines across the country? No, that's not a role that the federal government, I think, even has the power to make.
We cannot require someone to be vaccinated. That's just not what we can do. It is a matter of privacy to know who is or who isn't.
No, definitely not. You don't want to mandate and try and force anyone to take a vaccine. We've never done that. We don't want to be mandating from the federal government to the general population. It would be unenforceable and not appropriate.
I don't think it should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand to be mandatory.
Okay, you know, is everyone as senile as our president? And I don't mean any disrespect, but there's definitely some issues there. We can all see that. Now, I wanted just some food for thought from this representative from Oklahoma.
President Biden announced that he had lost patience with the American people and that he was demanding people get a vaccination. Now, I've had the vaccine, grateful for the vaccine. It's an entirely different issue for the President of the United States to wag his finger at the American people and to say, I know what you've chosen, but I choose something different and you're going to follow me. To literally instruct every employer with 100 employees or more, every federal contractor, every federal employee to bend to the will of the president and take this injection. That's a very different thing. There are over 39 million Americans right now that we know of that have already had COVID-19, have survived it, and have natural immunity. The president's demand for vaccine ignored those almost 40 million Americans that already have natural
immunity. Yeah, that already have natural immunity. Mark, both of those spoke to what you're presenting today.
Yeah, you know.
One moment. Sorry about that. For some reason, I am not hearing you. I don't know why. Let me just, if you could give me a test, we'll see if we can fix that again.
1, 2, test, 1, 2.
I'll keep working at it until we hear you. I do not know what's going on with my system today, and I apologize.
You switched off of my sound, and since I'm so beautiful, I probably just want to see my picture anyway.
You sound great now. Thank you.
I have five daughters, Michelle. I have five daughters, and they all say that I have a great face for radio.
That's such a great compliment from my daughter.
So anyway, but you've reversed it. Now you've got my picture and not my voice. So anyway, are we back?
We are back. Okay. We are back.
Well, it's interesting. I think all of that first group should be called as expert witnesses when the litigation comes regarding this mandate on employers of 100 employees or more.
And there is litigation.
I checked with our HR department, and we have 99 employees at the National Right to Work Committee. We have 49 at the Right to Work Foundation. So we put a hiring freeze, an immediate hiring freeze at the Right to Work Committee, because we'll wait and see what happens if we climb that $100 person mark. And I think that basically employers will start doing that. But I think we'll litigate, and we'll have Anthony Fauci as our expert witness saying, you can't do this. It wouldn't be enforceable or whatever he said there. It is amazing, Michelle, how fast it's changed. And I think we've lost confidence. It's much like union officials. A lot of union workers lose confidence in union officials because they're out there playing politics, which they disagree with. They're supporting candidates and ideas and things that are happening in government that they completely disagree with. And yet their money is used for that purpose. And they're compelled to support those ideological causes, which they oppose. And here we are now with, legislators saying you can't do this, but yet now they flip flop and you lose confidence in our leaders when that happens. And it's been going on since March of last year that they've been flip flopping all over the place. I mean, frankly, as an employer, and not even as a public policy group, it's hard to tell our employees what we're supposed to do and what works and what doesn't. You know, we clean all of our tables and all of our surfaces, and we find out that that doesn't make a difference. Then we put up plexiglass, and they say that stops the airflow.
Oh, remember the whole back to kindergarten? Sing happy birthday to you when you're washing your hands.
I still do that when I brush my teeth, Michelle. I still sing when I brush my teeth. Make sure I do it.
And that's great, because your breath is minty fresh today. So we appreciate
that. Thank you. That's great. But it is problematic, and I'm not sure where we go with this. And certainly the debate's going to continue. I mean, obviously there'll be litigation. We haven't seen the proposed rule for OSHA yet, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that allegedly is going to basically implement this mandate on employers. We haven't seen what that looks like yet. We'll keep our eye on it. But you're right. I mean, the battle lines will basically be drawn, and union officials most likely will be on one side, and lots of rank and file workers will be on the other. I'm confident of that.
Yeah. Moving forward, for those who are dealing with this, I want to offer some hope and some help. I've seen a lot of business owners who had one in particular had 150, 160 employees. And he said, well, you know, I had to go in and create another business for my shipping department. You know, so we do business as this. The shipping department is separate. So we have, you know, 100, we have just under 100 here. We have, you know, so many here. People have had to get creative because sweeping mandates not only are a violation of our personal rights, but the bigger problem is we're not paying attention to how these are not working. Or what about, as Representative Lankford mentioned, the 40,000 Americans like myself who have natural immunity, where we are seeing study after study, and I've been citing the latest and the largest out of Israel, where they studied 76,000 people with the Pfizer vaccine and said, your immunity lasts longer and is stronger if you've had COVID and survived. There are people who are at risk that should consider a vaccine. And vaccination companies should consider making them better so that they're safer and an easier choice for Americans to make. Nonetheless, here we are, Mark, in a place where we're not taking things, we're not even thinking anymore. It's just demand compliance. I'd like to offer some hope and help because this is hurting. I've seen, have you seen the pictures of nurses and you know, online crying? You know, I was a hero last year. Now I'm unemployed. What do they do?
Yeah. Well, these are interesting questions, and we've fielded a few of those calls. We have 21 staff attorneys that represent employees, and it's a question that kind of borderline gets to the mission that we have, and that is to protect workers from having their rights violated in the workplace by compulsory unionism. And one of the things that probably will happen here is that unions will negotiate contracts. They'll open up negotiations. They'll say every worker must be vaccinated. And then the workers that they are supposed to claim to represent, they're supposed to be able to grieve for them. They're supposed to represent them when it comes to a conflict with the employer as it relates to employment. I mean, for example, if you're fired and you're a union member, you would naturally go to the union and say, they fired me for not having the vaccine. Will you represent me? And because the unions control the grievance process and how it gets actuated and how it gets finished, they're going to say, no, it's part of the contract. You lose your job. So workers in America are going to have a choice to make when it comes to how they're going to deal with a union that says, we're not going to help you. You know, that's a real question. When that happens, I'm sure we'll get some calls here and we'll have to take a look at it. We have a fairly narrow mission, and we never thought that we'd be in the vaccination business. But it's relevant, Michelle, and you make it relevant because you talk about the workplace. And we've allowed government to impose mandates on workers in this country saying you got to pay a private organization for the privilege of working. And we've been the leaders in fighting back against that. Hopefully there will be leadership that will rise up. And I think there is, to your point. And you're making people aware of what's happening there. And that will help, too. But hopefully there'll be someone specifically talking about this issue and the legal implications of that for workers. And I don't think, unfortunately, we're going to be able to count on union officials because they're half in the bag with Joe Biden when it comes to the politics and the issues. And frankly, if they increase their political power by siding with Joe Biden on this, that's what they're all about. They've lost sight of the shop floor. They're more interested in what happens in Washington, D.C., or, you know, the capitals of the states, and as opposed to what happens on the shop floor. And this is going to become a shop floor issue. No question.
And that's where, again, I'm hoping that it's going to cut into their bottom line and suddenly they're going to have to develop a conscience again. For those who are in the midst of losing their job, I want to speak to you directly and tell you that I understand you're making the best decision for you, that you are being brave. It's not easy to take a stand. And because you are, we're having this conversation because you are, there's hope for freedom, or your freedom of choice, your freedom of association, our constitution, your freedom to choose how you treat things and what you do with your body, standing up for freedom of information that's been lost. You are part of that. And I know it may not seem like a lot of comfort when you're thinking, how am I going to pay my bills? But I want to thank you. And there are people like Matt who are standing up and talking about this issue that are doing what they can to make a difference. And hopefully we'll see a turn back and we'll see a change in America because we are standing up. Matt, I want to give you the final word.
Yeah, well, that courage is important, and that's the function. That's how we're able to do the work that we do here at the National Right to Work Committee and Foundation. We find individuals that have the courage to stand up against the mandate of compulsory unionism. And believe it or not, we took a case to the U.S. Supreme Court called Janus v. AFSCME. I mentioned that freed government workers from being forced to pay dues. That was the courage of one man, Mark Janus, to stand up, take the case all the way to the Supreme Court, and now that precedent applies to every single government worker in America. That's what courage can do for us. That's what it's done for us. That's what it will do for us in the future and what it's done for us in the past. And that courage is hard. It takes courage to have courage. But when you do and you stand up and fight, good things can happen. And that's really how this grand experiment in self-government works, for sure.
Yes. And thank you for the work that you do. Matt Mix is president of the National Right to Work Committee. He is president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. And he has been our guest. Such a pleasure to talk with you. Please come on again. Keep us in the loop so that we can keep people in the loop, because we are truly all in this together. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Michelle.
And thank you for being part of the solution. Okay. I appreciate you as well.
It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
Thank you for caring. Thank you for being part of the thinking people that want more information, that want to take a look at things that are going on and not just go about status quo. Question authority, question what's going on, and stand for what's right. We live in absolute gorgeous freedom in the United States, like something that the world has never known. Never before could people like me, maybe you, have the freedom to do or be whatever we want to be. But interestingly enough, one of the founders of our country said, if you're willing to trade your freedom for security, then, sweetheart, you deserve neither. But what does our president say? Our president says, this isn't about freedom. It's about your security. It's about your safety. Oh, so enter the stage, people who are taking a stand for freedom. Enter the stage, people who care about freedom of speech. I have invited a man who is doing just that, one of the people at the forefront of standing up for truth, for liberty, for freaking common sense already. He is an expert on sustainable development. He is a man that stands for free speech. In fact, he is the director and founder of Citizens for Free Speech and a frequent flyer on My Michelle Live, friend. It's so good to see you, Patrick Wood.
Oh, Michelle, it's great to be with you.
Thank you for keeping people informed. It's harder and harder as we see social media shutting down. I can't tell you how many times I've been canceled. I'll have to pull out my, in fact, I'm sure you've been canceled a few times.
Yes.
I'll have to send you one of these. These are the My Michelle Live canceled hats. Yeah. Wear it proudly.
I love it. Censorship is the existential problem that we face in America today. And it's not just censorship per se, but it's the destruction of the First Amendment. And without the First Amendment, if we lose the ability to communicate, we're done. It's just that simple. Everybody can understand this concept, Michelle. I think everybody in America knows somebody that's been divorced. Maybe they've been divorced, right? Just think about this. And every single, you talk to a marriage counselor anywhere in the country, every single person will tell you, if they've experienced divorce, what happened? You look like a perfect couple. You know, everything was going good and you're good friends, blah, blah, blah. And what happened? Well, he stopped talking to me. She froze me out. Stopped communicating. Every single time, that is the singular cause for divorce in America. Because when the talking stops, the fists start flying, right?
Ooh.
That's always the case. In the First Amendment, the founders of our country knew that we needed to protect our unalienable rights to communicate with our fellow human beings on planet Earth. This attack on COVID has shut down all that stuff. Face muscles, social distancing, dictating to churches what they can and can't do. That's the first point in the First Amendment, by the way. Communication with God. Leave it alone. State doesn't have any business sticking their fingers into how we decide to communicate with God. So, you know, we have an existential threat before us right now. Communication essentially has stopped in America. It's really, really a sick situation. And I don't mean sick with COVID, but sick because of COVID.
Well, indeed, with social media, this has been the uncomfortable dance that, well, most of the social media companies, they're private companies, and we've heard this debate even before COVID. Yet we are seeing that Facebook and other social media outlets are meeting with White House staff on a weekly basis. What do you know about that? And where does the line get drawn between a private business where you can come into, you know, my business or into my home and you can say whatever you want, or I could say, you know what, we don't talk like that here, you need to leave, versus you become a powerhouse in America and you're censoring. And it's not okay.
You know, I know. You know, this whole mantra of, well, I'm a private company, we're a private company, we can do whatever we want. That is so ignorant and stupid in America. You can't do whatever you want to do. Just because you dream it up and you can lord it over other people and destroy lives of other people with no recourse, with no responsibility, that's ridiculous. Companies have always been held responsible for their behavior. And why they float this now and why people believe it is beyond me. Companies are regulated top to bottom all throughout America, just like people are regulated, right? You go 50 in a 25 zone, you're going to get a ticket, period. There's all kinds of rules and regulations on people. We abide by them because it keeps society kind of an organized way. These companies that are doing this to us today, and it's mostly the big tech companies, right? They say, well, we're private companies. You can't touch us. You can't say we don't have free speech or whatever. It's absolutely nonsense. They need to be held accountable because they are members of our society. They do affect our society. And the problem is taking place. You asked the question about government versus the social media companies, and there's many more than just that. But the question comes up, okay, is government controlling big tech or is big tech controlling government? That's really the issue here that I want to bring out. We know the collusion is taking place. That's a fact. It's been in the news. There's been stories out on it. It's been documented. The question is, who's in charge? Is the government telling big tech what to do or is big tech telling the government what to do? And I will suggest very pointedly, big tech and all of its manifestations, not just social media, but all of the other big tech companies that are influencing society right now, they are the ones calling the shots for government. They have no respect for government whatsoever. I want to make that clear. That my studies of technocracy, you have to read my books to find out
yes.
why I say that. But they have no respect and no use for government other than the fact that it helps them accomplish their goals, okay? So as long as they can manipulate government and get what they want, it's okay. But if government crosses them, it's going to be for the politicians. and for the political system. And we've seen this around the world many times in different government situations. So big tech has achieved so much power that it now is able literally to dictate to governments what the governments will and won't do. This is, we've never faced a situation like this before, Michelle. We can't solve this directly with government intervention, you see, because the government in general is now subservient to big tech. So we can appeal to our government to pass laws, rules, whatever, to rein these guys in. But if they have more power than our government, you know, like the bully in the schoolyard, good luck with that. It's not working. We know it's not working. We've tried.
Let me ask you about the legalities, though, that we've danced around with big tech and that idea that, well, we're not a publishing house. Well, we're not, you know, we don't need to be regulated like one. And so where do they stand legally? I mean, morally, yeah, nobody, especially on a public in a public forum, whatever it may be, should be exempt from that kind of scrutiny or shutting out of other voices. I mean, we should have shamed them into a kind of equality and compliance long ago. But that's morality. That's, you know, the everyday people saying, wait a minute, this isn't okay. Stop this. You want me to use your forum? You want me to give you money? You're going to have to be fair. But we don't have a spine anymore in America, so most of us haven't done that. So, Patrick, what can we do? What is there legally that they are they really breaking any laws?
Well, they are all over the place. But again, this brings up another important point with this whole fourth industrial revolution, you know, great reset stuff going on today. These companies, and this applies to politicians too. You'll see it when I tell you what it is. You and I understand what it is to be a lawbreaker. Like I said, if you speed 50 miles an hour in a 25 zone, policeman is going to call you over.
Yeah, I may have done stuff like that before.
Okay. Yeah. You're a lawbreaker if you break the speed limit or any other type thing of that sort. You understand the law. You have to respect the law. You may not like when it happens to you, but you respect it. These big companies do not respect the law. They are not, in their minds, they are not lawbreakers. They are lawless. And there's a big difference between being a lawbreaker and being lawless. You see acts, for instance, you know, we could look at, take Biden, for instance. President Biden said, we're going to have vaccine mandates everywhere. Is that legal? No, it's not. Does it matter? Apparently not.
And that let me just to reiterate what you just said, and I want you to go further. As a matter of proof, for those of us who have a extremely short memory, let me just play sound bites. Biden, Pelosi, Psaki, and Fauci. Take a listen.
It should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand to be mandatory, but I would do everything in my power. It's like, I don't think masks have to be made mandatory nationwide.
Can we mandate vaccines across the country? No, that's not a role that the federal government, I think, even has the power to make.
We cannot require someone to be.
I'm going to make sure that you all can hear that. I'm going to play it one more time and a little bit louder.
I wouldn't demand to be mandatory, but I would do everything in my power. It's like, I don't think masks have to be made mandatory nationwide.
Can we mandate vaccines across the country? No, that's not a role that the federal government, I think, even has the power to make.
We cannot require someone to be vaccinated. That's just not what we can do. It is a matter of privacy to know who is or who isn't.
No, definitely not. You don't want to mandate and try and force anyone to take a vaccine. We've never done that. We don't want to be mandating from the federal government to the general population. It would be unenforceable and not appropriate.
I don't think it should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand to be mandatory.
So there you go. Patrick, could you hear the soundbite okay?
I can hear it enough. Yeah.
unbelievable, though. So what happened? we'll talk about that in a moment. I wanted you to finish your point, but for folks who just say, oh, you guys are just blowing steam, I just wanted to lead some credence to what it is that you're sharing with us today.
Yeah. You see this flip-flopping back and forth where all of the parties involved here.
Flip-flopping, it's outright lies.
No, we can't do that. Oh, no, that's illegal. Oh, no.
It is.
We would never do that because it's just against the American public or it's unconstitutional. Now, all of a sudden, that doesn't matter. Now we can do it. Now it's everything's good. Well, has the law changed? Well, no, but, you know, we have an emergency situation here. That's called gaslighting. In common vernacular today, that's that, you know, you're looking at one thing and telling somebody, oh, no, that's not what you see. So totally different, just the opposite. These companies and the big tech companies especially have this same mentality of lawlessness. They will do what they choose to do, and they could care less whether there's a law on the books anywhere in the world. You can see this attitude, for instance, when a Mark Zuckerberg and a Jeff Bezos and a Jack Dorsey get pulled into Congress and they sit before a congressional committee. What are you guys doing? The legislators say Ted Cruz rips into him, Cotton rips into him and browbeats him, say, you can't do this. This is anti-American. And, we're going to get antitrust rules and stuff. And they all hang their heads, we're so sorry, Senator, it's just an oversight or whatever. And we promise to do better, we'll try and, shape ourselves up here. And then they walk out the door, Michelle, right? They walk out the door and it's like that. And then they go out and do the same thing again. 3 months later, they're back in maybe, and they're caught doing not only just what they were doing before, but they're doing more of it now. They could care less what Congress says to them.
Is there no soul to, I mean, what is the end game? This kind of, as you mentioned, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today, the idea that there are these elite people, and I want to be one of these elite people who tell the rest of you little people what to do because we know so much better. Look at what's happening in America with your pandemic and your pandemic handling. And as you're watching, you just answer me this question. When those people, those technocrats in control, and who have, especially Fauci, who knows all, he is the all-knowing Fauci. Well, in his Fauciism, how's that pandemic going? How are those masks working? Oh, and those vaccines, so you don't have to wear those masks. How are those working? As there's so many people that have been vaccinated and have died and have palsy and have myocarditis and have gotten, and let's just for the sake of argument, Patrick, say, well, those are so few though. They're so few. Okay, how many of them have just freaking gotten COVID again? It's outlandish when there are nearly 40,000 Americans who have already had COVID and have crazy natural immunity that many of the new studies, and I'll cite one coming recently out of Israel with 76,000 people that say your natural immunity lasts longer and it's stronger. So how's that technocracy doing for us, Patrick?
I'll tell you, this whole coup d'etat, that's what I call it, started on January 30 of last year, when the World Health Organization declared a pandemic. I believe that was the time when the trap was shut. It had been in preparation for many years, and I believe they shut it then, and they've been attacking us ever since with volley after volley after volley. If we do not shake these people off, we will have vaccines forever, we'll have masks forever, we'll have lockdowns forever, and now it's even morphing into climate lockdowns, that because of global warming and stuff, we need to apply the same principles now to global warming so we don't all die from that. the same people are orchestrating both things right now. You know, that's what they started out doing with this whole COVID thing, to instill fear in people, to get them to move in their direction. These technocrats have been operating for years. The object is a scientific dictatorship. In the end of it, that's what they're pushing for. You know, there's so many examples of this. I just posted a story this morning from Littleton, Colorado, where there's some parents protesting up there. But here's the setup on it. The school board has said, I think they complied. They said the students should wear face masks this year in school. Well, the health department, which is not the school board, it's not the school system, the health department has criminalized teachers. If teachers in the school system refuse to enforce the health department's dictates, the people that teacher or those teachers will face up to 1 year in prison plus a $5,000 fine for each incident of not enforcing face mask wearing in classrooms. So if little Johnny has an epileptic fit or whatever, ostensibly, you know, and rips his mask off because he can't breathe, you know, the school board reserves the right to level criminal charges against the teacher for allowing little Johnny to be in a school in the classroom without a face mask.
Sure.
Now, who has the power here? You see, who is asserting authority here? It's not even the school board. It's these medical technocrats, these who are just full of tyranny. I have to say, I don't know what else to call it. They think that that's a good thing, that they have the control, they have the power, and they're going to assert it over other people who have nothing to do with the health department whatsoever.
Yeah, and there's some problems with that
all across America.
There's some serious problems with that. First problem is the idea, the hypocrisy. And I want you, as you're watching, listening, or reading this, to think, check your hypocrisy. Just go ahead. Be brave enough to check your hypocrisy. If you're the person who says, well, it's only a few people. I know Patrick Wood. Oh my gosh. Little Johnny and his epileptic fit. Now, how often is that going to happen? True statement, but check your hypocrisy, because this is all about saving just a few lives. Even if we just save a few lives, really? Well, then why aren't we taking cheeseburgers out of the hands of fat people? You know, why aren't we curbing sugar use completely? I mean, we have sugar tax, fine, but why aren't we outlawing sugar and people's connection to sugar? If we really care about curbing this virus, sugar rapes your immune system. Hello, it's Health Watch Wednesday. Let's talk about it. The second problem I have is the free speech issue, where we have people that say, oh, Michelle, you shouldn't be saying that, because then people have become ignorant. So ignorant that I was on Facebook, Patrick, you'll probably laugh at this. And if you're watching, if you don't laugh at it and you think, what's the problem? You need to freaking Google it. Someone was talking about, look, what about all of us with natural immunity? You know, or your immune system gets better because it's exposed to things. It's like, you know, exercising a muscle. And multiple people, Patrick, quipped back, where's your science on this? I've never heard such a thing. That's ridiculous. It's like, what is going on in our world? Our ignorance and our pain, and I don't want to discount people's pain who have lost people, but in your pain, because you've lost someone, you have chosen ignorance. You've chosen to be angry and to be part of the problem. Because of your curbing of free speech, we're not using things that actually work. We're not using medications or natural things that work, Patrick.
Yes. It's been estimated, by the way, if we could put the vaccines aside for a minute and put the face mask and all that kind of stuff aside for just a minute, there is a group, a global group of technocrats, and mostly in the health circles like the World Health Organization and the CDC in our country, who have vigorously opposed releasing drugs or allowing the use of drugs that would successfully treat COVID-19. That includes ivermectin and includes hydrochloroquine. There's a body of literature available on the effectiveness of these drugs, and people that are taking it swear, I mean, they know they got, you know, recovered from it because of those drugs. Well, if you consider the mean-spirited attacks that big pharma especially made against these drugs to suppress their use, it's estimated, as by scientists themselves, it's estimated that 40 to 50% of all the people that have died from COVID died needlessly if they could have had this treatment before they entered the hospital. Now, that dwarfs the deaths of all other sources, whether it be vaccine injury or just COVID by itself, or you trip and fall over a rake. I mean, you know, it just completely dwarfs anything else. And yet, who is being held accountable for this? You know, nobody. You say, well, you know, it's just the luck of the draw. Well, no, it's not the luck of the draw. 300,000 people might have died needlessly in America because of this criminal behavior. These people who say, oh, we're a private company, can do whatever we want. No, you can't. In India, by the way, just to prove a point, the Department of Justice in India has sued the chief scientist at the World Health Organization, essentially for war crimes, because the World Health Organization suppressed information intentionally on the use of HCQ and ivermectin, causing the death of tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, of Indian citizens. A lawsuit by the Department of Justice. Where's our Department of Justice?
That's a good question. And this is where we're seeing silence. We're seeing the shutdown of information. And yes, again, we're seeing hypocrisy. You sent a piece that was talking about Ohio State University, where 60,000 students and staff at this institution won't be permitted on campus unless they are vaccinated, unless the government has coerced you, forced you to get that jab in your arm, whether you want it or not. Even though this was one of the universities where women stood up and said, my body, my choice, but that's another that's another issue. But at the same time, they're going to allow 100,000 fans to go to their football stadium each week without those restrictions. We have those restrictions supposedly here. You can't go anywhere without a vaccine, but I'm in Seattle.
Across the world, citizens, just regular normal citizens like you and me, are realizing this whole thing is a sham. Basically, the whole thing is just a sham.
Why isn't it another hypocrisy, Patrick, I'd love for you to weigh in on. Why aren't these mandates considered racist when we were supposed to get curb getting ID cards because of access? Now only 27%, if my numbers are right, of African Americans are vaccinated, and they're going to be told you don't get to work and your kind aren't welcome here.
That's right.
Why isn't that racist?
I know it is totally racist. It's kind of an apartheid of a different sort, because it probably cuts across all different races, but it is horribly discriminatory, and it really kind of leads to a form of slavery where society is segmented into two parts, and the have-nots are demonized and the haves are elevated. This was the whole basis of any type of discrimination in history and slavery and so on. But now, while everybody is still talking about, well, we need reparations and, you know, we need this and that for social justice, right under your nose, all of society is being shoved back into that whole mode.
Thank you. BLM, where are you? Are you still standing in the vaccination line? Because I'm not hearing you. I'm sorry. A little louder for those of us back here. I'm not hearing Black Lives Matter say, wait a minute, you're discriminating against Black America. We're just not seeing that. That's where I say this hypocrisy maybe it is a telltale sign of of what's going on in the world today. That's my only hope. We're running short on time. I have another interview that is just around the corner, Patrick. But as we wrap up our time together, I'd like to get your thoughts not only on things that are happening, but also talk about, a little white rose that could make a difference, and how you are going to be holding more and more informational town halls and calls to action to help those of us who really care make a difference. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Next Thursday, the 23rd of September, Citizens for Free Speech is sponsoring a national town hall on censorship and what we can do about it. We've been big promoters of local activism, teaching people, training people how to get into their local community, to put up a firewall around their local community for some of these issues. There's a lot of success stories already coming out, but we need to get busy. So we're having a national town hall. It's free. We invite everybody to attend. You can simply go to our website, citizensforfreespeech.org. You'll see it right in your face as you enter the homepage. RSVP and come. Invite some people into your living room. Have a discussion. Put it up on your big screen TV. And we're gonna hit some of these issues. We got Dr. Joseph Mercola coming on to talk. He's one of the most censored people in the world right now. We have maybe a friend of yours, I don't know, Bill Martinez, nationally known radio host, great guy. He's one of our advisors for Citizens for Free Speech. We've got a great lawyer coming. You probably know who this guy is, Representative Matt Shea, former Representative Matt Shea from Washington State, will be weighing in. And anyway, we've got Catherine Austin Fiss also coming in from Europe. She's an American, but she happens to be temporarily in Europe. And so we're going to have a great time really getting experts to talk about these issues, get this discussion started. The White Rose was a movement, a small movement in Nazi Germany in 1942, created by some students, some young students at university there, in particular, a young girl named Sophie Scholl. They distributed leaflets around to people, the homes and students and stuff in Germany, promoting free speech and liberty. Say, guys, this is not us. Get back to this. Get back to free speech. And she got caught, of course, by the Gestapo. She was tried and she was executed by guillotine. And she gave her life for liberty and freedom. The last leaflet they produced found its way into the hands of the British intelligence towards the end of the war. And they were so moved by this leaflet that they reprinted the leaflet and dropped this leaflet over all of Germany from airplanes, from the bombers, up there. They printed millions of these things and dropped them from the air. This is a call speaking to us from history. Free speech counts. It matters. It's the most important thing right now, because if we lose it, we're going to be struggling with a lot of the same issues that they were struggling with in Nazi Germany. And that is simply unconscionable to me. And I think most Americans as well, once they understand it.
Patrick, what did the leaflet say?
Pardon?
What did the leaflet say?
Well, the leaflets were basically emotional calls to stand up, grow a backbone, take the moral high ground. And on the way to her execution, Sophie was reported to have said, this is basically her last words, that if people in a nation, all of whom are calling for a more righteous cause, for things to be straightened out, the problem is individual people will not commit themselves to that righteous cause. Everybody wants it, but nobody wants to be involved. Everybody wants the killing to stop, but nobody's willing to step up and make a resistance to it. This is the call to Americans today. Silence is complicity. I'm sorry, I can't put it any other way. Silence now is complicity. We must speak up for liberty and freedom. We must. And I thank you, Michelle. I love you because you got a big mouth, and I know nobody's going to shut you up. No way that you're going to be silent, even if you lose your microphone, even if you lose, you know, everything else. You will be out there somewhere promoting liberty and freedom. This is the call to action for Americans right now.
It's the
silence
cult
is complicity. So stand up and speak out while you still have an opportunity to do so.
Oh, thus ever it be. I need to say this. This is the one of the stanzas of the national anthem, and just being at a spectacular game yesterday for my Seattle Sounders. I'm one of those weird people that stands up and I sing that national anthem because I know what it means. We've forgotten. But the third stanza, oh, thus be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved home and war's desolation, blessed with victory and peace. May the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just. And this be our motto. In God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave. O'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. Yeah. I know. I get like that when I sing the national anthem, that's too, it. Because it means so much that regular people like you and me have a voice, and we have a hope like never before in history. And like never before in history has that been so threatened. Citizens for free speech at the front lines of a battle for free speech, a battle of hope, a battle of words, a battle standing against censorship. And Patrick, thank you so very much for being with us today. I can't thank you enough for what you do as well. God bless you.
My pleasure. Anytime, Michelle. Love to be on with you.
For more fun, go to mymichellelive.com.